call the December 5th, 2022 committee of the whole meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Member Covey?
Here.
Member Schneider?
Yes.
Member Spain?
Here.
Chair Brooks?
Here. Let's see here. Okay. So, entertain a motion to approve Commissioner Boron to attend the meeting via phone conference.
So moved.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
Chair Brooks?
Yes, motion passes.
And so Stephanie is in the meeting at 7:08.
Very good. Okay, matters from the public. It's a practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. Okay, we have none tonight. So we will move to the first item on our agenda. Lisa Shepherd and Kyle Cruz will lead the discussion on the Watts Recreational Center bids.
Excellent. At the November board meeting, the board approved the first four bids with long lead times for approval. So we are presenting today the remaining 16 bid packages. We did the first four because there's long lead time, and we rushed to get those, make sure we did their reference checks and make sure that there were good bids. And so then we took a little bit more time for the next 16, and we found that they meet all the requirements, good bid packages, and excellent references. So we're ready to have those approved at the next board meeting. I gave more information based on feedback from board members, so thank you for giving that to us to give you more information. I'm prepared to answer any questions that you may have on any of that, but I'm not going to go through every page. But please hit us with questions that you have on any of the documents in there or any of the bid packages that we presented.
I have just one question. I can't seem to find the documents to open it up, but I will. Fire, we only had one bid come in for fire, and I didn't understand why no one would bid on us.
That's a good question.
For fire suppression?
Well, not hopefully fire suppression and not fire causing.
Yeah, fire suppression.
Yes, fire suppression is like a $200,000, I want to say. And I was just surprised to only see one bid because it leaves us in a place where we just don't have the ability to know if it's the right amount or not.
It was sent to, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, two picked up the packages and only one bid on it once seeing it. So
it's just because we are busy.
Do you have a clarification?
I don't know. I couldn't speak to exactly why the second perspective should have been from the package. But it is a fairly
It'll be interesting. I mean, it's 5% of the 4 to 5% of the total expenses. So it's just, I was surprised that, you know, thinking we're a public entity and it's a pretty high profile building, and it was surprising that we only got one. That being said, y'all know more about this than I do. I don't know if we should.
Yeah, for specialty items, this did not surprise me. When it came across, I didn't question it because there are a lot of times there's a lot of specifications in a bid, and Nelson or U.S. Alliance might have said, you know, we can't get that material, or we can't, or it'll be higher priced, or they have enough jobs. They might have picked up a package saw when we wanted the work done, and they have enough bid. There's all sorts of things that could happen, and there's not a lot of companies that do this anymore. So,
if we had one bidder on like electrical or plumbing, that would raise some serious alarm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had it was a sort of an anomaly where it's the only one
very
bid.
Much, yeah, and makes sense with the specialty of the nature.
And this involves, I imagine, sprinklers and special materials in the materials and...
Yeah, fire suppression and updating the fire panel, so sensors to communicate with the fire department, upgrading all that, and then installation of fire suppression, so sprinkler heads.
Mm-hmm. And we feel like $200,000 is the right amount-ish.
It was very similar to the other bid from May.
Well, yeah, it was a little bit lower in May. It was like $160,000.
Yeah.
So,
oh, wow.
Slight increase, but not...
20% increase, that's it.
Yeah, if you look at the breakdown across the trade, there's fluctuations up and down across all the 20 of the trades, and that was one of them that went up.
Okay. Thank you.
I had a quick question about the one that popped out at me, and I sort of assumed, I saw that too, my wife assumed it was just like such a specialty thing, but the roof. How weird is that, right?
The $140,000 differential.
Yeah. So like everybody's lined up.
He can explain that one.
You know, I like that.
So under the roofing bid package, there are metal roof panels and metal wall panels. And in the bid documents, it calls out an initial manufacturer, and then it offers several alternate manufacturers. And my understanding is the four higher bidders did not look into pricing from the acceptable alternates. And the lowest bidder got pricing from a local vendor that was pre-approved and got significantly better pricing than the first listed manufacturer out of Los Angeles. So they had longer lead times, production began here versus using the local supplier that's approved. So would appear to be like due diligence by the other bidders.
Yeah, and they all had the opportunity to present that lower because it was a pre-approved substitute or alternate. So they all had a chance.
Is it a metal roof?
On the new section.
Oh, that's so fun.
Right?
Remember the old metal roof discussion from years ago? Oh, I've been
here. Yeah, there's a section of the roof on this will be the new stairwell.
Is that only for the new section?
Correct.
It's only for the new.
It's for the new section. So the building is metal.
The portion above like the stairwell going from lower level to the second story, that section of roofing above the stairwell is metal, and it matches the cladding that goes down that portion.
Got it. Oh, very nice. Yeah.
It's not the whole roof. It's just a shingle. Flat roof is a TPO material you can't see.
Yeah.
The pitched roofs are either shingle or the metal.
Okay.
Did you have another question? I know you.
I
know
did
some other
have
ones.
Another
those up?
Just a curiosity question. The vault, the wall that has to come down.
Good question.
The vault.
So the vault refers to on the second floor. There is a room that used to be a vault for the district back when there was more cash management on Watts. My understanding is it was an original community center, and so. At some point along the way, the vault door was removed and it just remained a room referred to as the vault. So the demolition of the vault is taking down those walls to accommodate the opening up of that space on the second floor and for the elevator.
Yeah, okay. It's a big safe and upstairs.
There's not an actual vault anymore. It was removed about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's always kind of just been unused because
we can't really utilize
it.
There's a lot of wiring going through it, so it's not open to the public. Of cables going through it. It was when the district, I think, was based out there during the ticket renovation before.
Got it.
And it was where all the cash was kept because Carol's office used to actually be in that room next to him.
Oh, so weird.
It was a big safe.
Good. To include that in this whole business of getting things safe. I did have another question.
Yeah.
Bart, do you have anything that you found in there?
No, that.
Not on that one. You had, the parking lot, the north parking lot.
Yeah, that is really interesting.
So that was, when you saw it, it was in the concept prices. So once that was removed, it was zeroed out. So it was not put in the bid package because it was zeroed out. But from the first bid, when we first started talking about it, they put in there as a line item, correct?
And subsequent to that, we've had discussions and surveys with stakeholders, and it was determined that it wasn't something people were anxious
correct.
At or felt that was particularly needed.
Right. So it was never bid out.
Okay, so it isn't one of those things floating if we can get funding.
No. Okay. It was in the original package, I guess you could say, they took it out before we went to bid.
Not an alternate or anything.
Yeah.
Just referencing it at one point.
It was
discussed.
Okay, understand. Thank you. Carol,
and then
do you have anything?
I think you asked one more question about asbestos in upper tiles. That will be taken care of once the building is closed down, renovation starts, not before then. There's a team that will come in especially for that to take it out.
Right.
The first thing we'll do before interior construction is
get rid of that.
Contain the second floor.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yes.
And disposed of properly.
This is floor tile, right? I know. Yep. Okay. Good.
I didn't have anything in particular. I think I was just more drawn to the condition assessments, which I thought were interesting, and seeing the remaining useful life less than 5%
of
for the Watts Center.
For some of the Watts Center.
Yeah, that's why it was advanced to renovation, because there was so much that was past its useful life, or only 5% left. And then if I have the ADA book, it's like has its own chapter of things that have to be improved in the Watts, so that's advanced it also.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad that we're proceeding with the project, just getting, I mean, I know I wasn't part of the original planning of it. It seems like there's a lot that is a need versus a want that's really being done here, and this is a well-used facility that will be even more used after the renovation. But what does RTU stand for? There's like RTU 1.
It's a rooftop unit, so it would be like a HVAC unit that controls a specific part of the building.
Oh, okay.
So those are all new. They do have to be relocated as a part of the project scope, but the units are still plenty within their useful life.
So we'll reuse those, those aren't getting replaced.
Question on the water pump, but I know you do water testing in the buildings, so even though there's a lead water main going into Watts, it's testing.
So I believe that might have been determined to be already been updated to ductile iron pipe.
Okay.
There are sections that are going to be replaced as part of the project, but the lead pipe is no longer.
Okay.
But there are sections of existing water main to be replaced with the ductile iron pipe.
Okay.
A quick question on, thinking of my recent caucus interviews, a lot of discussions about how environmentally friendly we are. 5 trees are going to get removed because of this project, is that what I saw in here?
So I pulled the plan, there's 2 mature oaks on either side of the kids' club entrance that are being removed, that they have to be removed to accommodate the build out.
Yeah.
The other trees, there's several trees that the player box were going to go in that would be removed. The other trees are contained at the front. West area, and it's mostly due to the hardscape going in for the Gathering Plaza and the reconfigured walkways. But we will plant trees for replacement. That's a given. Yes.
Any further discussion on this?
We don't have to pay anything to have those trees.
Yeah, it's 50.
Yeah. They're part of.
We don't have to pay a penalty to the building.
Oh, no, because we'll replace them. We replace on average like a 5-to-1 ratio of anything we remove, so.
There's a house in my neighborhood that's about to be torn down, and they have a mature oak that's going to be removed. That might seem to take a $10,000 fee to the village to get approval, but it sounds like you can remove any mature tree you want if you're willing to pay for it.
So. Yeah.
Okay.
We don't like to, and it's usually the last source, but in order to put that entrance, we had no choice.
Yeah, and I was thinking someone from Plains in the park district said, you know, it's terrible to remove these trees, and I like to pull the trees as well, but the point is, anyone can let go on the property and leave and remove the
correct,
trees.
Yeah.
They just pay a penalty. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And for us, we don't do it.
Right, and we replace. A lot of homeowners don't replace. Yeah.
And replace it 5-to-1,
pretty much. Well, yeah. The amount of trees we add every year to our inventory structure, I don't quote me on exactly 5-to-1, but the amount we replace on our yearly basis, we, you know, plant more than we ever take out.
Unlike homeowners, though, we have a lot of space.
Right.
Homeowners don't. If you're tearing a tree at a property, to put 5 up in that specific property is tough. I think
we
have acres to do it at, so that's kind of nice. But it's good. Someone will ask the question. Someone will ask the question. We just have the answer.
Yep.
It is sad. I am not a fan of, you know, it's hard. It takes a long time for the new trees to have that impact. But then again, these are the things that would do this right for the community, and this is what we have decided. So it's good to know we're doing as much as we can.
I agree.
Now, are we prepared to move this forward to the board meeting? Are we prepared for approving at the board meeting? Is there any?
Did we do that already?
But that was the initial that had to get going quickly because they needed to get materials ordered and so forth. This is the second wave.
So the next 16 will be approved at December board meeting, the ones that were provided in this committee packet.
So we're good?
Yep, thank you for the transparency.
I have a question on that chart. So, this is the price, So, on the bottom of the construction, the bid breakdown, the total of construction costs, so some of those things, were those already paid for? Because I know we already did the dashboard.
Yes, some of those things, the dasher board's already done, the glass is done, so some of those things have already been done.
Because $34,000.
Can you say that again? We don't know the question and what document we're referring to.
So when we in our last meeting, you said, you know, we were talking about like a $6 million price tag.
Commissioner Moore is referring to the line items at the bottom.
Yes.
So the dasher boards have already been authorized and the work has been completed. So that dollar amount is incorporated in the $6,041,000 at the top of that column is the total cost. Construction costs, and the bottom five items are representing the dashboard, which has already been done. The ice cream control, which is an allowance because we didn't receive any bid packages for that work. And then the other items were pre-negotiated the flat rate for the CGL insurance and the construction management fee of 3.5%. But the total construction cost at the top right is the sum total of all those items below.
Yes.
And the reason I listed it at the top was just to have it flow better because the estimates from White were different than the estimates and the bid results from the appeals, if that makes sense. Does that answer the question?
How are you doing, Stephanie? Did you hear that?
I can did we already spend that money, or because I thought we did, that was my question.
We spent the money for the dasher, yes.
It's been spent.
Okay.
Yep, and it's done. Yep. Okay.
That's
how it
does.
Okay. And I'm sorry, Stephanie.
The number of the pack is adding those two together, but some of this money has already been spent.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And it was included in the
projections.
The mid-year projections that were presented at the October meeting did incorporate the construction costs for lots this year, which did include the dash report.
Yeah. Are you good, Stephanie?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I did sort of forget you were there. I'm sorry, Stephanie, but thank you for weighing in. And Stephanie, you're good with moving this to the board meeting for approval? Okay, good.
Ms. Bart, good with that?
Yeah, Bart as well.
I just have one question. So we've got a 20% increase in budget, and these numbers shows an ending fund balance in 23.4 of 1.28 billion. So after the increase, we still, the low point is 1.4 billion.
Correct.
Thank you, sir.
And that's without any ability transfers for next year. So
so that 1,280,000 accounts for what we're projecting this year to be a $1,250,000 transfer. We're still going through our final round of projections and fiscal 24 budget amounts, but we do anticipate that the transfer will be in that range. Might not be that exact amount.
Okay.
And then for future years, we did just move to a rolling 10-year average. Obviously, there's no guarantee that there will be a capital transfer, but we wanted to try to be as realistic as possible in our budgeting and forecasting. So we just used a rolling 10-year average for the amounts that are shaded in yellow.
Yeah, for next year, there's significant
cushion. So really that 1,280 is before we even get any reimbursement from IDNR for the park grant. So we're being conservative in that timeline and anticipating that reimbursement will come beginning in fiscal 25. When we're halfway done, we have to have an audit done of the just the grant, a grant audit done, at which point we can submit for reimbursement. Kyle and I anticipate that will take place early summer, and our hope would be that we would get the park grant funding in fiscal 24, but we are being conservative in that timeline and anticipating it for fiscal 25.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Very good. Okay. If there is nothing more, we will move on to an update on the final tax extension. Elisa Shepherd and John Patera will lead the discussion.
I'm throwing it right to John.
All right. Thank you, President Brooks. So real quick here, just wanted to summarize the 2021 final extension. I think I mentioned at the previous meeting that we did actually experience a decrease in EAB of about 7.5%. So just a reminder that EAB and the tax rates have an inverse relationship, so ultimately we'll see an increase in our tax rate for the year. And that's because our levy is obviously capped for any old growth that based on the PCAL law. Which actually, for the levy we're talking about, believe it or not, it was 1.4%, which seems like forever ago. So when factoring in the increase in new growth of 0.40%, we did account for all new growth. Our 2021 levy was at 4%. Again, 1.4% of that would have been the old growth, and that left us 2.6 cushion for the new growth, and that wound up being 0.4%. So again, the important thing is we captured all the new growth on the 2021 levy, so no lost EAB there.
So, nice job.
Any questions?
Yeah, is the EAB loss like concentrated in a certain area? Like or was it due to like a change in the assessor's
formula?
Because it strikes me as
unexpected
given the rise in true market value.
Yeah, so the reassessment is going to be on the 2022 EAD, so that's where we do anticipate a fairly significant increase in EAD. The Cook County is tied to a multiplier, and that multiplier actually went down, which I think contributed to the decrease. Mm-hmm. And they ratcheted that multiplier up due to COVID. It was, I believe, 3.2% in the 2020 levy year. That got down to about 3%. So I think that had something to do with the decrease, but it's hard to exactly pinpoint. The reports we get really just show residential property and then a very little amount of railroad property within the village, but it doesn't really identify by property type or anything beyond that to be able to pinpoint exactly where that EAB decrease.
Yes. Wondering what the value in doing that is if park district and municipalities are going to levy to a certain dollar amount anyway, like, and it doesn't really reflect reality. It just seems more confusing than effective as a policy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. That's the issue with levying. It's really just our best guess because we have to do it. In September, October, we have to pull the numbers together, and we don't know exactly what it's going to be until that EAB comes out. And the EAB does have a direct impact, if you remember, on our special rec fund, because that's capped at 4 cents.
Is that
going to
be a problem?
So we are going to expect a bit less in the special rec fund this year. We have adjusted for that in our projections. But again, anticipating a larger increase next year with the increase in EAB, and we did levy the special rec fund to capture that. Because again, that is funding that can go towards WAS, since there is a lot of ADA initiatives within the scope of the WAS project.
I presume we expect 2022 to go up.
Correct.
A lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we anticipate.
Yeah, I mean, that's
about a 30% increase.
It's like completely bizarre to the logical financial brain how this stuff works, but it's,
I don't know, for public accountants, he's got it.
I'm just thinking about the legislators who came
up with
this. There's no way they understand this. I'm just no, they don't get it.
I mean, they don't understand it. The fact that we're still a year behind from the Depression is that's why we're talking 2021 now, because the legislators gave a year tax break during the Depression, But it wasn't really a year tax break. It was a, we're going to take a year off, and then for the next 80 years to today, we are still paying taxes 1 year behind.
I didn't know that, folks. That's
very interesting.
Is that true?
I did not.
Yes. It was, from what I understand, it was during the Depression when people couldn't afford their taxes. They said, no taxes this year. And
just, really?
And they simply did not eliminate the tax, they just postponed it. And that's why it's Illinois, from the best of my knowledge, because I'm on the record here, I'm not going to say it's a pure fact, but to the best of my knowledge, it's because they skipped a year of tax collection, and now we're always a year in arrears. Which means that 2021, in theory, I mean, property values went down in 2021, the year after COVID, and then they're going to skyrocket in 2022.
The thing is, as somebody who's covered property tax levies in other states,
yeah.
Other states aren't this convoluted.
They're not. You go to Texas, and it is as easy to understand, and it's a lot more transparent. It's a little bit clandestine here, and, mm-hmm. but it is what it is. What I don't understand is how a decrease in EAV can equal an increase in taxes, but then I remind myself, oh, it's because we raised the rate so much to ensure that we would get it. If the EAV was up higher, we would still collect a lot more. It's not like it decreased and we collect more. It decreased, but just because it decreased doesn't mean you don't collect more.
It moves the rate.
Yeah.
Thank goodness, John, you understand this. Thank goodness.
we do have our old financial report from the 1930s in the catacombs, so I did find that pretty neat. So I might have to look into
the whole thing.
You can verify.
Yeah, you can see. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Okay.
Any other questions on that?
Thank you, John. Thank you very much, John. Then we will move on to personnel, discussion of the percent merit increases. Again, Lisa Shepherd and John Cotero will lead this discussion.
Before we leave this discussion, is this normally done in closed session, or are we?
No, we can't because we'd have to name every single employee. It's illegal to go in on just a big group. But a lot of times we do dismiss staff. So if you'd like to dismiss staff.
No, I'm perfectly happy doing it. I thought I recalled at some point.
Make them stay.
I'm okay.
No, I think it's fine to sit for this discussion, for them to stay. It's absolutely fine.
So, if we were talking about a particular person, then we go to executive session.
Yes.
So I think we did last year for certain like adjustments and things like that, or bonuses, but not for the overall. That time of year again that we talk about our annual increases for staff, and I'm going to turn it over to John again because he did all the financial work on this. So.
Thank you, Lisa. So just a quick summary of the memo that's in the board in the committee packet tonight. So in the prior year, the board did approve a 5% merit pool. That's when inflation was pretty consistent with where it is now, rolling 12 months. As of October 31, 2022, was 7.7%. It was right around that same number last year, which was a lot of the reason for the justification for a 5% merit pool. Prior to that, the pool had been consistently at 3% with the exception of 2021, which is at 2.3% as a result, direct result of COVID that year. So similar to prior years, we did survey neighboring districts, which showed ranges from 3% to 7.9%, with a median slightly over 5%, about 5.5%. And we also did note that a few of the other neighboring districts did provide market adjustments in their most recent fiscal year. So given all those factors and the fact again that CPI is still at 7.7% as of October 31, we would propose a merit pool of 5%. We did kind of look at how that fit into the framework of the current or the fiscal 23-24 budget as it stands right now. Again, we're still tying all the numbers together and going through our final round there, but obviously we did take a look at it, where it's at, and it is affordable and within our means of being able to spend for the fiscal 24 year. So in mind, that's where we had come up with the 5% proposed merit increase.
And traditionally, whatever the board approves for the full-time staff, that's what we pass on to also the part-time staff. So that's how we do our program budgets, based on that same percentage. So we are basing the part-time on 5% at this point, unless the board changes that. Just so you know, that's kind of, it carries on to that. So, any questions?
What's this due to our pension liabilities when we... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great question. So IMRF has a, there's potential for an accelerated payment if earnings increase by more than 6% within a person's final rate of earnings, and that timeline is differentiated by whether you're a tier one or tier two employee. So that can get somewhat complicated, but the rule of thumb is if you go over 6%, you might have an accelerated payment, which isn't necessarily a penalty, it's just to kind of get you back to where you need to be based on what the actuary was assuming in their reports. Mm-hmm. That number did actually, as of January 1, 2023, IMRF is going to adjust that calculation to be 1.5 times CPI to help account for the fact that there is inflation. But there is potential, Carol, if we did go above the 6% and beyond that, for these accelerated payments, which would be funded from our IMRF levy, ultimately funneled from other levies, from general and recreation. So that is a consideration as we are working through this. And it is a common issue across all districts, and IMRF is trying to do all they can to respond to current market conditions.
When we compare ourselves to other agencies, because we do have to be competitive to our neighbors, we also take a note what we have done in the past, maybe some other agencies haven't. So last year we did a 5%. We also did salary adjustments last year, and we have continued some of those into this year based on the economy and some of the our daycare maintenance. Those are two, and the entry-level positions we have done a lot of price adjustments, because those are the levels that really need to. So we have done wage adjustments this year already on a lot of the staff, and so that's why we feel this is a really good amount, because we did it last year, we've done it this year, we've brought them up. So this is really based on their merit and their contribution to this district. In addition, I'm requesting that every year I always put in the budget, and it was approved for a bonus pool. I'm asking for that again, and I would like to actually increase that based on a lot of staff shortages in different areas. We have been bonusing if someone is doing doing more than their normal job. And I've been actually doing that throughout the year. I don't wait till March to do that. If we had staff step up for camp this year, they were bonused right after camp was over, both managers and actually site directors and things like that, front desk. When we couldn't find staff to fill in that, and they had to work extra hours or give more, we bonused them then. So we try to bonus right when good things happen, but we still see a lot of staff putting extra time and hours across the board. So that's everywhere from hourly employee all the way up to administration. So we are recommending that, or I'm recommending that we increase that to, I forgot what I put here. From 38,000 to 50,000, and to be used at my discretion across the board with input from the department heads.
And could you just talk a little bit about some of the savings that we have simply because we cannot fill certain positions?
Oh yeah,
which certainly also impacts what the people who are here are doing.
Right.
I know that from my own experience.
Right, and we have saved money. I guess you could say saved money,
yeah.
But
and
it also is a burden
inadvertently saved
money. Every time there's someone's missing, if they're gone 3 or 4 or 5 months, salary's not being paid out, but we still have to do the same amount of work. So we've seen that in childcare, we've seen it at the front desk, we've seen it in record management, we've seen it in the custodians. I think there hasn't been one area that hasn't been affected by that. Throughout the district. So, right. So, by increasing the bonus, we're getting it from those saved costs from actual salaries and passing it back on to those staff.
So, that's a critical.
Just in regards to Children's Circle, looking back to the projections that were provided in October, Children's Circle was projected to have an excess of revenue over expenditures of $446,000. And then when we went through that exercise, assuming we would have been fully staffed, that number would have been around 190,000. So that's how big of an impact it has had, specifically on Children's Circle, mm-hmm. and as Lisa mentioned, the custodial positions too.
Now, we factored some of that into the pay and benefit increases.
Correct.
We did.
We did do that in order to afford the full time and pay that benefit. Unfortunately, we still haven't filled five positions yet. So we're still, we still can't, even with that, people are not going in the child care industry. So that's
market adjustments have been made with the salary survey specifically.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'll say this, I don't want to get into the gory details of it, and I'm perfectly fine with the recommendation, but I do think we just need to be cautious of, how far we go each time. There's always the rationale of, hey, someone quit. Someone's always going to quit. Whether it's 2015, 2019, 2022, someone's always going to quit, and you always have extra money, because of that. No one really uses their full payroll in any industry. Now, that being said, and last year has been tough, and there is a lot of extra. My personal opinion is, I am okay with this. I didn't realize that 6% rule, so thank you for mentioning this. I do think we need to be cognizant of it. But look, we're obviously not at market rates. If we can't fill five teachers, and that makes me a little bit nervous.
Well, actually, that's not true. We are at the market rate for salaries and benefits. People aren't going into this field, right?
But
did you say that? We had that big discussion.
But that means we're not at market rates, because if you paid more people would go in.
Well, I don't necessarily...
Right.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that.
It's closer to jobs, part-time teachers, full-time teachers, and part-time custodians the same day. It's the same mechanism. We sent an email to 12,000 people on Friday on a bonus structure. We're looking at the incentive. I'm sure you've seen it for $250.
Yeah.
We had three people apply for that. Of the custodian jobs, we upped the pay. But we didn't promote it other than Indeed. We had 26 people apply. So,
but the pay was not up that much over child care.
But I mean, there's
to be honest. So
I mean, the market does what the market does. If we paid $1 million to these people, you'd have these roles filled.
Like, but we wouldn't be able to, like you said, meet the payroll. I mean,
that's a whole different. It's a whole different story. But like. There is an equilibrium where, okay, we couldn't get people to apply for the teacher's jobs. If we paid, I'm going to take this to the extreme, we paid $1 million, I bet you'd have people pay. I'm not saying it should be $1 million, but there's a challenge here. Oh, you already have by vote. Like, I'm for because I think we need to do it, but I do think we need to be cognizant of, hey, what is our long-term plan here? Because we keep on inching towards, hey, here's some pay raises, hey, here's some flexible work schedule, hey, here's some better medical benefits, here's this.
Yeah.
And we're still
believe me, we
struggling.
Go through it every day. But
what's interesting, Michael? We don't know the breakpoint.
I know.
We don't know the breakpoint. Because I bet
no
you
one
today,
does.
If we had this for a full-time salary, we'd get people.
Yeah.
I don't think we know.
I don't think we know.
And
either.
I don't think
you're
the
right.
market knows. And I think that's what's so fascinating about this.
Yeah.
That you can look at it objectively.
It's sort of
all these incremental little ups, at what point does that respond?
And at what point do we keep on going up? Because we know that, because we've had these same discussions, Michael, this isn't something new that we haven't talked about daily. But if we move up childcare, then everybody else has to get moved up. And how much can we stand to raise our salaries and still meet our, break-even point, right?
What I like here is that the PTEL 5% goes with the wage increase because that's sustainable, because we're not going to, once we raise the 5%, we're not going to lose it.
Right.
So
right.
at least our largest revenue source is keeping pace with wages. So that would keep me from going higher. And I do think it's something we need to be cognizant of, because I do believe we're going to head into a slowdown. Year or two, and we don't want it. Once you give something, you can't really take it away.
Correct.
So I think we limp along and see what happens in the next year.
And this is how I see it, is we are absolutely limping along, and it's the right thing to do.
Right.
But we just need to be cognizant of how long we've lived. I guess that's my point. Like, we Please just be aware of it. And I'm totally fine with it.
We are aware of that.
I know.
On staff, I think they're really struggling because it's been 2 years of this coming along, but we hope this light at the end of the tunnel, and that's what keeps people going at the end of the day. Hopefully that people, as we slow down, may decide to come back into early traffic.
Yeah.
As the viruses go down, they become more manageable. Maybe people aren't as afraid to work
with
the.
That's not happening with this winter.
But you're exactly right. We have to watch that, and we might come back and say, okay, we have to do another wage adjustment. It has nothing to do with merit wage adjustment for early childhood. Or if we can't get custodians who can't fill those positions, we might come back and say we have to do this. We just have to be. We have to watch how much we're raising this, and then we have other, say, degreed staff. Yeah. And they're not getting raised, and all of a sudden there's only $1,000 difference between someone who has doesn't even have a 2-year degree and someone who has a 4-year degree, and then what do? We have to adjust that. So
we work Starbucks a lot because a lot of the teachers will work part time in Starbucks. Starbucks and Black was $15 to $17 for new staff right now. And they're really struggling. They close at noon.
Yeah, they do.
They can't find people.
Well, but that's also, you don't have a daycare across the street that everyone loves. So part of it is hometown, right? So it's not.
They're closing because they can't get staff.
Yeah, but they also don't have. Starbucks doesn't have a line out the door, like.
But that's not why they're not open.
Nobody wants to have better
hours than in the morning.
Yeah, they're
and then they're not open at 5:30 certain days.
I think that's their bread and butter.
Many businesses are not open when you'd expect them to be.
Well, the point really is that our entry level teachers are now paying over $1 an hour. I think it's 18.
Yeah, that's great.
So we're competitive with others.
Good.
It's funny, I think we're all like, I think at least it sounds like a lot of us are in agreement, but we're at different reasons as to why we're different.
Exactly.
And we also need a cultural shift for people to think it's really valuable and respected role.
It is.
Yes.
We know that.
I know.
Yes.
It completely is.
And for the record.
It does. And Bobby's doing a lot at the community college level, and Jessica's our advocate out there, and it is true. We have to show value. We even talked about elementary school and high school teacher, middle school teachers.
Yeah.
They're leaving the workforce. Yes. Anybody working with children does not, whether it's the demands of the parents on them, which I think is part of it. You know, they don't deal with the illness rate compared to other jobs, I guess. They can't work from home. They can't walk. You know, the kid comes in, they're getting every cold. So I think right now there's that. Is this profession worth it? And it has to come back around to, yes, it is. So.
Yeah.
You have my note, so you don't have to talk chatting about it, at least with me. But are there, are people knocking on the state doors and saying, hey, look, this is an issue? And I know we did a pretty good job of getting grants in the previous years of COVID. Are those opportunities still there to help us with some of these challenges?
The grants are still there for early childhood, and every time I see legislators, that's a topic I bring up in my other
parents
yes,
GJK and other organizations.
You know,
to talk about subsidizing somehow in early childhood because this is the needed.
But that's going to have to happen on the federal level.
Well,
it's going to have to be
right. But there's no. I tell you, there are letters that are written on. Form letters that are written on our behalf that we're asked to take and, you know, edit them slightly and send them to your Congress folks. If it's something that helps, you know, Aaron over there is our awesome copywriter over there. You know, we can write a letter and say, hey, look, if you feel compelled, please send this to your legislature so they can get the message even more loud and clear and it's consistent. Just inundate them with mail.
Barb? Do you have something you'd like to add to the discussion?
We don't know what the price, what salary you have to get to fill all the positions. But as Carol said, there's a forecast for recession. You know, what the unemployment number is a year from now, no one knows. I saw an estimate today it will be in over 5. So as unemployment starts to rise, I think even at the same salary we have today, you start to see. If they're still open, you start to see more and more fields. We don't care if you don't raise the salary too much as the demand for that salary is going to come down. I have a question, John. You said the inflation rate is 7.7 and the merit pay
on average works out to 5% overall. What is the additional 50,000? And I understand it's done per person, it's not a flat increase. What does that 50,000 work out to as a percentage increase on top of 5%?
Well, 50,000, so 38 was built into the budget, so I think we're asking for 12 additional in this meeting. But that would be about 2% of total full-time wages.
Okay, and what about that? Okay, so it's 2%.
A little less.
But that's full-time. We also we'll also bring in part-time into this too, so it's not just full-time. So we're probably looking at, I don't know, 1%, if you think of all the, it depends. It differs from employee. Yeah, it differs between employee to employee too.
Right. So I'm just looking on.
Yeah. And it's a good question. Yeah.
So, but I'm just thinking, there's a 7.7% inflation rate.
Right.
And we're 5 plus a number, 1 or 2. So we're at 6 or 7. But still, there's a decrease in real earnings. Not a huge one, but there is a decrease in real earnings.
Right.
I think the private sector is doing that too, though. So I don't think private sector employers are matching inflation.
No.
I think at least at my company, we're anticipating about a 5%. And I guess that's what the Federal Reserve wants, is wages to not keep up with inflation.
Yeah, right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And how is this? So I think most private employers are not going to.
Inflation.
Because they're doing the same thing. They're right. It's not sustainable. So I think that as much as it's painful for people, I think it's going to be normal, and that's being probably factored into that recession estimate.
I also look at is that in the past, when COLA was only, say, 1.2%, we were giving 3% raises. So I think if you look at overall, we never meet exactly COLA, and so it kind of balances out now. We're not up to 7.2, we're at 5, you know.
Yeah, and I think the whole thing here is we're just trying to find the right balance between the unfilled positions, inflation, and ultimately, you know, I want to make sure I'm comfortable with it in relation to the budget as a whole and making sure it's sustainable. And for two reasons that Carol brought up, the IMRF factor was one thing that we considered. And then just long-term sustainability and being able to tie that to the increase in the property taxes is why, you know, I'm comfortable at 5%, and I really wouldn't want to push it beyond that.
I guess one last question. So our employee base is probably different in terms of how inflation hits compared to the general population. I would assume a lot of employees are renters as opposed to homeowners who have a sort of fixed cost in terms of mortgage. Do you hear anything back on that? Or so we say, yeah, I got an 8% increase in my rates. I don't know if there's any price controls on leases or anything like that, but what do you hear? Do we compensate people enough that they can sustain other rent increases?
I think we made some pretty big adjustments in those types of employees. A lot of them, when gas prices were high, that impacted a lot of those community workforce. The majority of our staff comes from the city or, you know, Chicago, Trinity, that kind of area. So we made, I think you remember, 100,000 worth of adjustments to early childhood. And we've had tennis instructors who've got 50% increases because they've been offered down the street, you know, more money to leave. So we're looking because we can, some of that we can pass on with additional costs for certain programs, we can help that. But I'm not necessarily hearing a huge amount about rents.
Jared Tampany, but we've made adjustments for those frontline employees are already before this even 5%.
Okay.
Make sense?
It does. Okay. Stephanie, would you like to add something to this discussion?
I think that's probably not to talk too much anyway. So my concern is that, you know, if you look at 2021, there were many agencies who did not get any raises. And we were very good to everybody. We paid everyone for COVID. We still gave over 2%. We did 5% last year. And we're still not 2% over what the village is giving equal with the school. But they haven't had as many, you know, adjustments as we've had to sell. So I guess I just don't get really the reasoning behind why it has to be five again, because I don't, to make that the rule now, 2 years in a row, you know, you're trying to set an expectation, and we've already done a lot of salary increases, we're increasing the bonuses. I don't think throwing money at the problem of the daycare staff has worked. I mean, that's what you, everyone knows that. There's a lot more issues there that we talked about. It's a hard job market for certain industries. I don't think this is going to make that difference. Plus, we've already gone to market rate there. So that's just my two cents. We're setting this precedent, and I don't really see why. We've already adjusted the salaries. We should be where we think we should be at, or above the base, or why we keep doing that.
Now, some of this would be distributed differently, right? So just because it's 5% doesn't mean it applies to everyone?
Correct. It's merit-based. Yeah, it is merit-based. So answer your question about other park districts, if you look at that, the park districts...
Glencoe.
You have to remember that the village of Glencoe, the only that 3% is not their union staff. So their union staff actually is getting more like 7 or 8%. This is the non-union 3%. And you have to remember the village staff are paid considerably more for some of the same jobs. So when we look at some of Kyle's positions in the parks, you look at and you'll see that they have like a 20% increase compared to the same job that we're paying here. So I don't always look at the village as apples to apples. They have a higher salary pool as it is.
Lisa, that 3% that the village provided is just their COLA piece. So they weren't
going
to provide us with any merit-based compensation. So
thank you for that. So that's it. Did you hear that, Stephanie? That's only their COLA piece. They wouldn't provide us with their merit piece. So they more than likely will be going higher than 3%. So they divide it as up, and what some districts do, they divide it between COLA and then they give the merit increase to make whatever they have. So we just put both of them together for that 5%.
But so look at 2021, there were many agencies who gave 0%. So like at what point do we feel like we're at a good rate, because we've been very generous over the years. So, like, at what point are we going to say, well, we're good? I mean, I know it's never going to be forever, but we've really focused on this for 3 years, and it just seems like we're not acknowledging it.
I think that's a fair way of looking at it. I will say, in terms of the village, my suspicion here is that those who did work, if you're looking at 2021, 0% really looks, it stands out. But those village employees, a lot of them, they, unlike the employees here, they didn't work. Things were shut down at the village a lot. So there was a different way of running that year there than it was here. And I am certain that does not include any of their union employees, right?
They retroactively actually went back and gave them, I think,
3%
after it was approved.
Okay. So Bobby said that they went back retroactively, gave 3% in 2021. And there's other districts that did that too that aren't listed here. So they're making up, you know, they're giving more, like Glenview is doing 9%. Wilmette's doing 7%. You know, they were a little lower in the past, so they're making it up now, so we're not suggesting that.
And I guess one other thing is, we don't want to lose more people, in that it is impossible to fill positions. At some point, if we start losing people because they're just simply going to make more money 5 miles from here, we're not going to have employees to maintain the programs. That's my concern.
So we did the salary comparison, and we already looked at the other districts. So you can't just go on, well, they're giving a 7% rate based on no numbers. They're making $10,000 up.
Actually, no. That's not, we did our salary comparison actually before COVID, and all these agencies have also done salary adjustments this year because they just did their first probably salary comparison. So they've all done salary adjustments also, or the majority, I should say all, but the majority have, in addition to their raises.
Okay, so
it's hard.
You know me, I'm going to continue to say the same thing, but
yep.
If no one else agrees, it doesn't really matter.
It matters, Stephanie.
But you know, it's just at some point you can't keep going up this percentage-wise without looking at the number we're increasing of what we're paying out, because that goes into our program and that affects our participants. So at some point, you know.
I don't know if you could hear what we were talking about beforehand. I'm on your side with this one. I agree, and this is kind of the limping along that we were discussing earlier. I see your point completely. I still think it's the right thing to do to go 5%, but you're in my opinion, and I'm speaking for Michael, not everyone here, you're not wrong. I think you're actually very right, but I think we're between a little bit of a rock and a hard place. And it makes me nervous that if we don't, it's sort of a lesser of two evils, if we don't do this, in a world where you're facing sort of 9% increases in people's expenditures, and you don't go, you know, with that 5% and say, hey, look, you know, we've done stuff in the past, you could have a challenge with an exodus, which exacerbates problems. But you're not wrong, Stephanie, and I actually agree wholeheartedly.
And the reason I'm comfortable is because of the tax levy.
That's why we looked at everybody's salary, to make sure that we're compensating good people well. So we have done this exercise, so I just want to remind us that we've done that, we did that for a reason, and we adjusted salary generously for that reason. So
Carol has a point to make, Carol.
I was just saying that I agree with the concern about adding on increases, but to me, because we are raising the levy, and that's something that is that kind of, I don't know if you call it a fixed revenue exactly, but in some ways it is, with a fixed cost, which is your base salary, at least they're in step with each other, so I feel better about sustainability. I think in some ways there's a, potentially we could run into higher costs down the line if we don't retain people. So that's another concern.
Yeah.
I would say that's true.
Me too.
Your points are appreciated, Stephanie.
Very much.
And I'm glad you made them, and there is agreement with what you say. But Bart, I'm just going to go around here and make sure we are all, we're in alignment here to move this forward for Lisa.
Yeah, and just a brief comment.
Sure.
I think a year from now things would be very different. I think inflation would be different, and I think the unemployment levels would be different. So it's not like we're just increasing no matter what. It's like, wow, it's a different world. And even with our big increases, I think people are still, they've had a net decrease in real compensation.
That is
so
true.
Yeah, I'm on board.
And for those reasons and others, yes, I am on board. Michael, I think you...
I'm on board.
On
yep.
board, Carol, on board, and Stephanie?
I made my point, you know how I feel.
Okay. Yes, thank you. I appreciate that, and we will move it forward to the board meeting.
Is that the bonus pool also?
And that is the bonus pool as well, because for me it was, yes. Okay.
Okay.
Timer.
Yeah, are we going to be effective in the communication saying that, look, this is... Are we getting some, can we communicate?
Yes, I totally communicate it that way. This is not part of your salary package. Mm-hmm. This is just because of whatever they're doing, and it's just not automatic. Everybody gets it. Now they have to be doing above and beyond.
And the year where we know that staffing was short.
Exactly.
Okay.
And if there's not merit, we may not spend it all. I just want to be prepared in case there is.
Very good.
So.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
Can I just make one other point?
Yes,
is that, you know, we talk, I know Michael has asked this before, and a lot of times I don't bring it out in the public meeting, but I just wanted to make sure that you understand all the other employee appreciation things we do that help with our culture here, and it's ongoing, it's throughout the year, and we have what's our team called? I always get it wrong. I was going to say that. What's our team? What's our fund committee? Whatever it is.
Fund committee.
Fund team. So, which have done really revamped, and they keep on doing really interesting things. And some are just little things, but they mean a lot to the employee. So we've revamped our spare card. So staff can recognize other staff. They fill out the spare card. Hey, I saw you picking up trash in the parking lot. Or, wow, you did a really good job with that screening, baby. And we put it down, and they get the cards, and then they put them in the little. Well, they put them in this little pool first, and then they get the cards eventually, saying whatever they did, great. But there are award winners out there, and they can get everything from snacks for their team or apparel, or
Ooh.
This month there's a grill. So, and we ump that up during the summer. We do more of them because there's more staff. So it's really employees appreciate employees. So we're catching you doing something right, and it's kind of, they get a double bonus. They get a chance to win something plus this little, like, wow, you've done a great job.
Yes, right.
It is.
That you recognize.
It's amazing. So
your peers.
Everybody gets this card, and we spread it out, and it's really a feel good thing. And Jenny does emails out and everything like that.
Let's do that with the board.
Well, actually,
let me give you some cards.
Honestly, what we do is, and I spend six figures on this. We send them to customers to give to our staff.
Oh, we could do that. We could look into that.
So we send in the mail to our top tier members, we send them a card saying, if you recognize great service, please give this to our staff. And there's a way to do it with our call centers as well.
And so if
you give this to the parents, or even in your surveys that you put in there, if you notice our surveys, we say, did a staff member provide outstanding service? If so, please put that in here. That gets back to the employees, and they are in hog heaven.
That's a good idea. We'll expand it to our customers, too.
We'll chat about
that. Yeah, we'll figure out how to make that happen.
It's a phenomenal tool.
But we like that. So we do that, and we can extend it even further, you know. And we've gone to great efforts to make sure it's not only the teachers, or that's people behind the scenes, like, you know, John did a really good spreadsheet or whatever. Jenny. Oh, Brian. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Brian, yeah, he explained out, you know, right, one of those. So we try to do behind-the-scenes things to the health infrastructure. It's not always the one who's always out front, you know, always gets them, but we try to make sure we get that. In July, we had ice cream truck come and for all the staff, and that was really fun because it just pulled up front and everybody went out and ate. We have coffee trucks that come up, things like that. Our holiday party, obviously, we did a Thanksgiving holiday card, and there was a modest monetary gift in that, so that went to all employees.
Nice.
Full-time and part-time, they all got, you guys got the card with them. Can't pay you, but just know there was something in that card also. It's not a bonus, it's a holiday gift, and everybody gets that, whether you work 2 hours or 40 hours. Early childhood department, they're celebrating their teachers throughout the year, but a teacher appreciation week is a big one and ranges anything from Starbucks to small gifts to luncheon. In the summer, we're constantly buying Gatorade, popsicles, ice cream. When there's a hot day, we run to Costco and buy all this stuff and bring it down there. It's going to be 100 degrees, so we're constantly doing that throughout the year, and those things add up. When you bring watermelon down to them, they're like, oh, this is great when it's 100 degrees. We've already talked about bonuses for some of the staff that when we're doing program growth, we give Park District apparel to our staff, Yetis, backpacks. This year we're giving backpacks. The staff love good swag. They really, There you go, the hat. At the same time, they're helping promote our from our us in town, but they love when we give them. I know we really upped the game for both lifeguards and day camp in Children's Circle this year, and believe me, they love that. Beginning of summer team t-shirt, we give every year with our new logo and our new message for the year. Beanie hats, you have those. So those are some of the things we're doing. We were just talking about maybe we could do funding like door decorating for the holidays and have each team member door and we'll judge it and they get a prize. And so different things like that really gets involved and talking. And Halloween was another one. We decorated doors and our rooms and got involved in that. So those are, and the committee's always coming up with different ideas, and we really leave it in their hands what the staff really wants. So kudos to that. So we do that too. I just want to. Yeah.
There'll
be axe throwing.
They have to dress in the 70s. Okay. I was like, I don't
have any 70s, so. But we're comfortable clothes. We're jeans and stuff like that because we have axe throwing, we have mini golf, we have spoons.
Maybe Lisa will borrow something.
You would love what I have for you.
So I just wanted to update you on that. It's all these little intangibles that we do throughout the year to make our culture, like, you know. Yeah, yeah, it will be. Did I forget anything in our appreciation? We do so much throughout the year. It's just fun.
Food is always well.
Yep, and they'll have like lifeguard of the week or voted internally, camp counselor of the week. We did a lot with that in our Friday updates. What?
Returning staff or
remote
players.
Yes. Yep. So, just wanted to let you know of that. Okay.
Very
that's
nice.
It.
Very good. Okay. So, moving on to other business, this was something that I requested be added to the agenda. A commissioner update on Village Planning Commission meeting. I've been on a lot of these external committees like the ATP, or they called it something, I don't know, the Transportation Committee thing,
yep,
that's
yep,
village-wide
yep,
thing, and the Dog Park Task Force, and never really reported on what happened, and I realized that was a failure, because it kind of feeds your overall understanding as a board member of what, for instance, what really happens when you dig in on, say, a dog park.
Yeah.
So, based on that, and I know the Planning Commission is kind of accelerating in what they do so that it's not exclusively signage, which I sat on the committee for a while and that kind of was it, certain stuff like that. It's much more interesting and involved now. So Carol, if you wouldn't mind, could you just talk to us about, I understand it was a relatively long meeting, about the non-signage related discussions.
Okay, because they're still approving signs. So I'll just give you an update, I think, on the plan, because it'll be interesting just as, you know, people in Glencoe, but also for our own process. So I think it kicked off in July. So they're working with the he was here with
Lee Brown
is at every plan commission meeting.
Yes, he is.
And yeah, they're lengthy. And, so we started that out in July. So first they talked to us about what a plan is, the demographics, the lay of the land. So basically what they're doing right now is the state of the community assessment, so for Q4. So you saw that they came here, they're coming to all the different committees, or not committees, you know, various governments. They're doing key stakeholder interviews. They have the All in Glencoe website. They're basically trying to get a sense of the community. One of the things they did ask for in the last meeting was for us to report back 3 key takeaways from our respective entity, and I asked to redo it for the Park District because I feel like we didn't really have a like cohesive conversation about what we would like to see from the village. It was more of like, oh, this is an interesting interplay.
Yeah.
So if I could at some point be able to report back if we had views about what we wanted, that would be excellent. So the next quarter, and this is a long process, the next quarter is defining policy direction. So we're going to summarize what we've learned from everybody. I already have some results. And then there's sub-area planning in Q2. Q3 is developing implementation strategies, and it just goes on. This is like it's almost seems like it, that's at least a over a year process already, and there's no final document and vote. So every monthly plan commission, we get an update on it. I think this is interesting information for ours, just in terms of participation. So they have this allinglencoe.org website, and they've had 1,300 site views, 750 site visitors. So I don't know if they're able to like log unique visitors, but I thought that wasn't like 10%. The population wasn't terrible so far.
No, that's good.
It's more than,
they have a comment map and an ideas wall, which I can get into. I went on it and commented today. I was just like, I could do more than just my commission. I can comment all over here. So there were 300 people who took the first poll when it was live. So that's not bad. So what do you like most about Glencoe? So the top three is the quality of community amenities. So I'd like to think that's us.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Access to nature, lakefront.
Us.
Yep.
Great place to raise a family. Us.
And the school district.
Yeah. Well, the school district wasn't really listed here.
Ooh.
Arts and culture was last, which was interesting.
That's interesting.
Restaurants was kind of ranked down, so seems like the people really like the ambiance and family-friendly nature.
Mm-hmm.
And the best opportunity for future improvement, now this is more village-centric, economic development in local businesses, and then sustainability and environment. So I think that's interesting because that also probably relates in some ways, or at least people think it does, back to us. So, kind of skimming along, they've done a lot of key person interviews, like I said. So the last meeting was a SWOT analysis for Glencoe, which probably a lot of this you already know. I thought a couple interesting stats, which are interesting to remind folks, is that nearly half of Glencoe's population is nearing the empty nester.
That shocked me. I mean, because we talked about that at the last meeting too, right?
Stage.
Yep.
And then also, this has come up a couple of times, but the personal income statistics are falling. And we think that's more to do with the fact that that captures your, as you retire.
As you retire, yeah.
That income isn't being captured. So it actually went down pretty significantly, and we're lower than Winnetka and our other North Shore neighbors now when we weren't as of the last census. So I think that kind of tells you a lot about and frankly, a lot of our discussions have been about housing, which I think is really interesting because it's not just about the inability to necessarily stay in Glencoe, but I mean, I actually agree with a lot of this, but you've got different perspectives on the Plan Commission, right? You have people who are interested in historical preservation, you have people interested in sustainability, you've been used to, like, all different viewpoints, right? So you've got the historical folks upset that the historical teardowns are taking place.
Yeah.
That basically they're tearing down all of these, I'm going to say more accessible, but not accessible, homes in Glencoe, and there's nothing in the zoning code right now that's really preventing this escalation of prices and property.
Yeah, building, yes.
And so this is a perpetual problem, and the whole NIMBY, not in my backyard issue, where we're really our zoning code is not set up for housing diversity and sustainability in terms of a
like the green
economic,
right?
Economic diversity in terms of like you want different ranges of incomes just in case something there's a downturn,
right?
That you have more like sustainable housing stock. You don't have. We're also really high for energy usage, so we're not green as a community. So it wasn't really clear if it's because people just have large homes, so they just run everything possible and don't care about energy prices, but we're like one of the worst communities for energy usage.
Wow. Well, they're building these huge houses, and there's two people.
I get those letters about my neighbors, and I always want to ask my neighbors, like, how much energy are you using?
My relationship is worse.
But like my house is 130 years old, and
well,
it's more efficient in society for me to use more energy now than is to build a new home.
Yeah, so that was a discussion. Like, is it the size? Is it that
we have
old homes that
measure.
Are energy efficient?
Yeah.
But its carbon footprint is higher.
according to this map, then Winnetka, Highland Park, Northbrook.
That's terrible, and I would love to know why.
It is. I think we have a lot of single family homes, though, and I think, you know, even in Winnetka, you drive along Green Bay Boulevard in Winnetka, you've got big apartments. Well, Matt's got those big apartments.
Some, but they're a larger community.
We don't have any. We've got a few homes over, like, we've got a few on Green Bay.
Yeah.
But think about what happened with, what's that house part?
The Green House, yeah.
I can't think of the address on Green Bay.
538.
I mean, they wanted to build some affordable housing there, and to do that, you got to build three stories, and, you know.
That keeps coming up in our meetings.
I bet.
It does.
Well, it's just going to go in a big circle, because it's been discussed for decades.
Yeah. It's an issue. Actually, I will say, because I get Redfin alerts because I was trying to buy a house in Bledsoe. It's very hard for me to find one in my budget, but there's lots of them in my budget in Winnetka. They still have under $1 million homes in Winnetka, but they don't in Glencoe.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's been a really significant part. You're not going to be surprised that, you know, I guess there's a lot of things in the SWOT analysis that we would know, like high tax burden for residential property owners, right? So Glencoe potentially has a problem if, you know, we have three car dealerships that have sales taxes. We don't really have a big sales tax generating base or big industrial property tax base. So I guess that's an issue for us too, right, with the tax base.
Yep.
Although, Carol, I'll just interject one thing that has really been beneficial to the village during starting with before COVID, but ramping up during COVID, is that the sales tax for all the stuff we're ordering to have delivered to our house, well, that's now, you know, beneficial to the village, right?
Is it?
So, yeah, instead.
It's local tax on
That's new.
It's like a big, it's had a big impact on the village.
They changed the rules.
Yeah.
So, but that's new too, that the state changed the policy for it. This one I agree with, like the bike pedestrian issues. I can't get over to the Green Bay Trail easily, and you can't bike through downtown.
So yeah.
It's like I can't. It makes me not want to use it. And they talked about home rule. One of the things I thought was interesting is so I looked at some of the ideas walls comments, and ones with the most reaction. There were a bunch of people posting that they weren't, like, some people, like, wanted to improve sustainability, improve, like, diversity and inclusion, and you had a lot of people with really negative responses, like, something was, like, 36 dislikes for something about having a diversity day in Glencoe, which really surprised me. Yeah, so let's see, where was that? And we were like, we don't think that's the community. And it's like, well, do we not know our community? I found that a little interesting because I feel like we're always having conversations about sustainability. And some of these responses, I was just like, well, that's interesting to have. I don't know if I really, but there's a lot of feedback here. The stop virtue signaling with woke agendas and global warming nonsense had 36 likes.
What?
On this website.
Ooh.
Yeah, there were a few then. So there's been a lot of park district feedback. People want bathrooms.
We know that.
right,
Stephanie?
People like the park district. It's funny because there's so many people who like bikes and want to be like Amsterdam. It's like you've got some really, I guess we're more divided than I think meets the eye.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Interesting.
So there's a map.
But remember, this is the voluntary, this isn't
right. Yeah, it's voluntary. So
voluntary. So you're going to get maybe the ends of the.
You have to put your email in when you submit a comment, it's required.
But not when you submit a like.
Not when you submit a light.
Right.
That's
so,
the thing.
Not
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I tried doing that.
The anonymous light.
To see what happened. And yeah. You can do anonymous light. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of things about around the beach that they're really funny, you know, like more sand.
Yeah.
Less rocks.
Well, less rocks.
Less
sand. So I want to know what questions are they asking that are getting response about something that has nothing to do with the village. So what questions are they asking?
So the thing is, so far, the poll was about what they like. It was just getting a sense.
Just like
so
what you like about Glencoe, not that
like
they didn't say
Glencoe.
The village.
And that's where I was like, they like the amenities and they like
that we have.
The
lake. Okay, that's interesting.
And then they have this website with the comments, which I would say about 25% of them are park district related. Mm-hmm. But they haven't actually had like a comprehensive survey yet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But this is probably helping them develop that, right? This
exactly.
you go broad and then narrow it down. Yep. But remember, the average constituent has no clue that the village isn't the park, isn't the school, isn't the library.
Yeah.
I mean, the average you knock on someone's door and say, hey. You know, who runs the library? And people will be like, oh, the village does. Who runs the school? So I mean, every other community, the school board reports, even in Chicago, the school board reports to the mayor.
Well, that's
not
actually,
every other
that's
community.
Uncommon.
That's very uncommon.
Park district.
Well, in Illinois.
In Illinois.
Right.
In Illinois,
like,
but someplace other
country. But the vast majority of the world, the vast majority of the country, I believe, the schools sort of report up to the...
No, that's actually
oh, really?
Not.
Actually
no.
Not true at all.
Because
schools,
I, yeah.
It's more likely that the park district does in other states.
Yeah.
Not, never
their
schools.
Districts
their
are their own thing.
Yeah.
You know all those school board politics going on right now.
Right, but then in some... Anyway, I don't necessarily know that everyone understands.
I agree. I totally agree with you on that, Michael. They don't.
I've had like 10 people ask me about the trail...
they all think
the sidewalk
oh, there's tons of comments. And someone made a buckthorn comment on like every area where it exists.
And they also, I think most people understandably think the golf course and the Green Bay Trail is under our park district jurisdiction. Quick point on something that you brought up about sustainability in Glencoe. I did something that I will never do again, but I did it to be a good sport. I am sort of on the sustainability committee. I'm the park district rep for that. And one of the things I did was to do this project where we walk around three Fridays in a row to the same multiple block area, looking inside people's recycling containers, leaving a note and then collecting data on what we see in the containers.
Oh, yeah.
And this is regarding compliance with whatever the rules are. My takeaway is, I didn't think the people doing it were all in agreement as to what was recyclable and what was not.
Yeah.
Oh.
I found that to be kind of
interesting.
Surprising.
Yeah.
Many people that I rarely did you see a container that was full and compliant. Very rare. In fact, I don't know if I saw one. Many people did things like they put their recycling into a bag and put it the whole bag in. What happens at the recycling center? That entire bag goes to the landfill. They don't open it
Some
up.
Of those bags are designed for recyclable.
No, they're not. They're,
not
they're
a single
go,
one.
No, don't buy them. Don't pay money for them.
The grand, the bags they give out. By the way, I don't do that. But the grand bags that they give out are biodegradable, and so I think people assume that.
Biodegradable and recyclable is two different things.
I know, but I think people assume.
Yeah.
I think there are.
I think there's. Yes.
Yeah, and they're compostable. But they're bags and.
Compostable is.
Right.
Composting is a whole different thing.
Right, it's a whole different
thing. You know because you actually compost.
I do.
Okay.
I know.
We got a little pot.
I know.
Bring the pot, walk over.
So I will say I was disappointed that a community as sophisticated and well educated on average as Glencoe was so. Confused about the recycling program. That was one thing. So that might be feed into this. I'm curious about the questions, the two questions that you referred to very early in the meeting that they are going to have on their survey that directly relate to us. Why are those on there and what are they?
Well, there's one that's in there. She probably doesn't know it. One's about open space, and we're not the only ones in the community that have open space. The Forest Preserve is in Glencoe has open space. The golf course is open space.
Schools.
The schools has open space. So that made sense because we're not the only one. And the other one was very generic, too, that could apply to the the park district and the, okay. So they don't, the first survey when I first got here had a whole bunch about the school district, about the park district, and both of our agencies, one meeting, they said, you know, you're confusing people when you put that. So there's he totally took those out. I was made sure. So there's just two generic questions for school district, probably two very generic questions for library, and that's it. So I was happy with that conversation. And they know that we're doing a survey very soon also. And
good. That's good. And I'm glad you have such a good relationship with Phil Crawley.
Yeah, all of us are very good, yeah.
I did really tell them that we're doing our plan.
Yeah.
And that just that we had some general concerns about confusion among the responsibilities and the survey.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if I could say something about what we wanted in the plan versus just
what are they looking for? Yeah, like we want them to,
I don't know, like, you know, everyone has their agenda, right? Like historical folks have, you know, want their thing. That I don't know. Is there, we can all participate individually. I think part of it for like they just want like key people who understand the community to participate in everything.
Yeah.
First of all, so like answer as yourself. But I think they were just trying to see if there was anything that, I don't know, I mean, that we can report back on. I don't know that it necessarily has to be directly tied
to
our actual facilities.
Lee Brown, who came to speak with Phil, mentioned at the end of that, I didn't really understand what we were supposed to say for that either, but in any case, at the end of that presentation, that there was that there is this idea that they're going to consider putting water tanks for water retention, and they may want to reach out to the park district to see if they can put those retention tanks, I think this is what he said, on park district property. Did I understand that?
Yeah, I didn't know because I'd never been approached by that. I've never brought up as an idea. I know that we do have the water tanks at Lakefront Park, and now that we're doing Lakefront Park, it makes it a little more difficult to do projects when there's a tank underneath it, because you can't really do how you would normally do it, right? Kyle would agree. So I don't know if, he might have just put that out there to see what people thought, but I have never been approached by that, and I don't know. The board would have to have a very lengthy discussion about the long-term ramifications of what we could do with the property if they put those tanks. It kind of pretty much makes it, you're saying this will always remain open space, and so the board, if they ever bring that to us, would have to. I think the park board and the staff are always that we continue to have this open and honest dialogue of what we can do together. And what we can't, you know. So it's not all in like let's do everything together. But whenever we have a discussion, for example, on air handlers, for example, I in my monthly meeting with the village and the school and the library, hey, we're working on a air handling bid. Do you guys want in? And we do a lot of that. Like, hey, we're going to do this bid. You know, put something in this bid? That's economy of scale, and that really we really work together. We stay in our own lanes, but then, hey, we have the ability to do this. So to work together whenever possible. Keep that open dialogue, because believe it or not, a lot of villages and park districts or school districts don't have this really good relationship that we have now. Mm-hmm. So that to make sure the personnel and the staff and the boards and everybody feel like how important that is, which we do have here, and I don't see it in all communities.
Is there some sort of zoning policy that we would want if one of the golf courses or country clubs, like that there would have to be certain parkland for every...
We have that already. There is actually already a law. What I would like to see is that when they alluded to, if they ever hear anything happening to the golf course for either of those country clubs, which I don't think are going to happen in my lifetime, but if they did, that they would do something where the park district has first right of refusal of that property. And by what I mean is, like, the Hoover Estate, for example, they moved on that so fast that we could never bid on it if we wanted to, because we have to go to referendum, we have to do this. It'd be real. I know there's probably nothing they can do, but it would be nice for the park district to be able to have an opportunity to purchase that if the residents want us to. And by what that means is that we would have time to do a referendum to get the money to do that. Because obviously we don't have, how much did Hoover State go for?
Oh, Yeah, but maybe not the whole thing, but
part of it, or whatever.
Really,
but that we have to, but we, no matter what land, we'd have to go referendum to get that money, or have time to get grants, or something.
Yeah.
Which Hoover State, by the time it came up, it was sold before we even had a chance if we wanted to. I remember, I think Stephanie was the one that brought it up, well, do we want that? And I'm like, well, we don't have the money. We'd have to go for a referendum. That takes a year. And, you know.
Yeah. What's the status of that, by the way?
I think it's on hold right now. I think, I don't know if the developer just put it on hold and is selling it, or is waiting to do it till the economy changes. I don't know. It's on hold right now. Yeah. But anyways, it would that be nice to be able to get open space. But we need time to do that.
And money.
I mean,
it's not free.
Yeah.
We have to go for referendum. We have to go look for grants. There are grants out there for open land, but you have to match them. You know, and those things take time to advocate for.
And I'm going
to
add one quick thing while it's on the top of my head. I think it's difficult sometimes for people who aren't with the park district to appreciate that although some piece of land or some asset that we have is not currently being prepared for a project or activation, we try to operate under the understanding that we don't want to tie the hands of future boards.
Right.
So we don't want to, for instance, if I just talk about the water tank thing, say, yeah, sure, we're not using that. Go ahead and put a water tank under it. It's just open space, because we don't know what future boards might want to do with that land. So that gives us a slightly different perspective on it.
We need to be cognizant of it.
Yeah.
We need to be cognizant. The decisions that we make have to be the ones, they're not easy decisions. The Booth Cottage is a really good example. Not an easy decision to take the land and permanently use it for a home, right? But you do what you do with the best information you have at the time. And so everything that's due takes into consideration. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
We don't want to tie the future board's hands unless we feel it's the absolute right decision for our
and
community.
And in fact, that's a 100-year lease, so it's not forever, ever.
But it's like the lease for that Green Bay property.
100 years is forever for you and me.
Yeah, that Green Bay property, right? The one where they did that permanent easement through the front yard, and now we're stuck with that permanent easement forever.
Yeah.
So we don't like to go into
lifetime things. Anything is tough.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
But
sorry,
if there's anything else, just the
thank
meetings are the
us.
Last Wednesdays of the month, so
we'll noodle about in there.
Right now.
Is it
hard
for us to give village background before we do our strategic plan master plan? It's sort of like Lisa's comment.
Yeah.
We're going to buy air handlers. I mean, we know we're buying air handlers, but see somebody wants to get involved. But trying to give feedback to the village before we have done our plans is awkward, because we might change our mind and then say, hey, you already told us you want to do something. I mean, I think it's hard to be objective, giving them feedback.
I think you're right, but in some ways it's like, well, do we have an opinion about how bike friendly Glencoe should be? You know, there's properties, right, that we might want
to... Yeah, I would like to see the Glencoe more bike-friendly. I would like to see that kids would be able to ride safely to school or to the Green Bay Trail or to the beach.
Yeah.
Would I want... We were on the active transport committee saying that. We wanted more walkable, we wanted more bikeable.
Mm-hmm.
So those two, I would definitely say, those are things that we support.
And in fact, if you recall, that led to us... with
taking out
connect.
That round. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And doing
that horrible intersection with Maple Hill. That was the park district. When we did Glencoe Connect, we incorporated redoing that so that it was a safe. It's always been a horrible crossing where the Green Bay Trail dumps onto
the road.
We
redid that whole section just to make it more.
Plaza.
But that's how I get to the Green Bay Trail.
Yep.
To get there across Green Bay Road.
Right. It's dangerous.
Like, it's dangerous.
Yep.
So I always like.
You know, there used to be an underpass here.
Or should there be a stoplight to get people across safe?
It's in my
well, how about a speed bump?
Or speed bump. Or whatever they do. But I know they've studied that whole thing.
Street and blah, blah.
Yeah, so anyways, but yes, I would say that's one of our things. We want to make it more bikeable and walkable. I think that's a no-brainer for us. We would like people to be able to bike or walk to our programs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think Watts is so popular? Because it's so right close to school and they could just walk over there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definite... needs for that, but
so there's a number of things that you and staff know now that we would like to do. So actually, you would be the source of your recommendations.
But you guys here we're both are. I think we both are, have ears to, at different places, you know. So, and I think we will find stuff more in our, when we do our strategic plan. It'll be interesting what we find out and say, oh, we could really pull the village or school into that.
But I think we'll lean on you to be the conduit to the village more
yes.
than others.
Yes.
I think
yes.
that's what you're asking.
I agree, yeah.
Although I'm on this commission where I can talk in front of all the other commissioners, so
yeah.
it's nice to express things, not just to Phil, but to
yeah.
the trustees.
Oh, I totally
yeah.
agree.
Sure.
Because sometimes
yeah.
that carries more
sure.
weight.
Yeah, agree.
Anyway.
Okay.
I'm so glad I found and recruited Carol Spain.
Me too.
I vetted her, and now she's here.
Well,
with an urban planning background is very useful.
It is.
And
I love it.
Bart is going to be your permanent replacement for the any time that you can't make these meetings. Is that what I was saying?
Yeah. You just can't vote. You know. So.
Okay. All right, Lisa, do you have any
other I have questions? Nothing else.
Oh,
it's good.
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 Okay.
No executive session.
Okay. Stephanie, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so I entertain a motion to adjourn at
8:41.
So moved.
Good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Great. Motion passes.